I used to have a more impromptu approach to it, but now I have a pretty set idea of what the painting will look like. And with the stackables, which I'll be exhibiting at your gallery, those low-fire, more experimental play impromptu process of configuring the pieces together, making separate units, and then seeing how things go, or noting it's missing a color or some kind of pattern or texture, and then making that and then adding to some recycled parts of some of my other works. But the geometric shape canvases that are really heavily influenced by wallpaper design patterning throughout history, I think, even starting mostly around the arts and crafts movement to the 1970s to current happenings, because I feel like there's a revival of that, are in those pieces, but now they're floating into the stackable collection.
Welcome to the Cedar Break Podcast. I'm your host, David Linaway. For today's 305th episode, I'm really excited to be joined by Nicole Granvold Roller, who is a Peoria artist and educator. We talk all about her painting practice that incorporates a variety of geometric shaped panels, as well as these stackable modular units that incorporate ceramics, various wood shapes, and a lot of color, a lot of influence from design, wallpaper, the arts and crafts movement, and so much more. So we talk all about that in the episode. We're also super excited that Nicole will be showing her work here at Studio Break Gallery in the show Color Stacks with Mary Alice Carroll, a two-person exhibition at Studio Break Gallery here in West Chicago. The show opens May 18th and runs through June 11th. Please join us for the opening May 18th from 5 to 8 p.m. And of course, you can find all sorts of information on social media and of course on studiobreak.com. I would note you can find a full gallery of works available on studiobreak.com, as well as links to Nicole's website, nicolesgallery.com. And of course, be sure to follow her on Instagram at Granvold_roller. Want to note real quick that this exhibition came about as part of our 2022 Cedar Break Student Competition, which I juried. And of course, we do have our 2024 Cedar Break Student Competition open to all currently enrolled and recently graduated undergraduate and graduate emerging student artists. Our juror this year is Natalie Pavoni, who is an artist and educator and project coordinator at Purple Window Gallery in Chicago. She'll be selecting three undergraduate and three graduate artists to appear on the podcast, and two artists for an upcoming two-person exhibition at Studio Break Gallery. If you're interested in applying, just head on over to studiobreak.com, look under the competition page, or you can also find it in the link tree on Instagram at studio_break. And it's really easy. You submit a small fee, you email all your information, and you are done. So once again, get those apps in. Deadline is May 15th. If you like listening to artists talk while you work, be sure to check out our archive. Again, you can find us on Spotify, Apple, lots of stuff to listen to while you're working away in the studio. And of course, be sure to like our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter X at Studio Break, and of course, be sure to follow, say hello at studio_break on Instagram. Now let's dive right into this episode with Nicole Granvold Roller. Stay tuned. Welcome to Studio Break, Nicole Granvold Roller. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great, David. Thank you.
Yeah, super awesome to have you on. You know, obviously you're going to be showing in Color Stacks with Mary Alice Carroll. Again, that's going to be in May on the 18th. 5 to 8 p.m. at Studio Break Gallery in West Chicago. So it was really great, again, to be able to juror the 2022 Studio Break Student Competition and to see your work along with Mary Alice Carroll. I just think it goes together so well. I love your color combinations and, you know, the new materials exploration. And obviously, I think it fits in very well together. So looking forward to kind of putting this all together. So as we've been kind of talking, you have appeared on the podcast with Megan Hines for an exhibition we had. And
yourself, obviously.
Yes. But, you know, it'll be nice to kind of take a real, you know, closer look at your background. So remind everybody, are you originally from like Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken?
Originally from Minnesota, and actually Thief River Falls, Minnesota, early on. And then like more my middle school, high school was in Moorhead, Minnesota. And then that's where I attended undergrad at Minnesota State University.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and have been living in Illinois probably about 26, 27, 28 years. I'm not sure exactly how long, but long enough where this is now my home.
Sure. And again, as we were kind of talking, very interesting background as you've been a teacher For a long time teaching art. I'm sure that plays heavily into your practice. And obviously, we'll talk about how all that's kind of changed and shifted. Did you always know that you wanted to do art kind of growing up? And I would maybe just imagine you're always kind of busy making stuff.
I really didn't grow up in an art household. I remember drawing quite a bit. It wasn't something that I thought about, I just did. And even in high school, I remember taking some art classes, but it wasn't until like I started college and they asked you what your major was. And I was like, oh, I kind of like art. And so I just became an art major. I mean, it's completely different now than what it was in the 90s when I started school. I don't think the pressure was quite there, at least for me, and having like this path by my freshman year in high school. So yeah, it was a little different.
And did you have any other kind of outside interests or anything like that, kind of growing up related to the arts, musician? Always fascinated because it's always so different for everybody.
I think more than anything, I was an observer of my surroundings. Like if I look back or think back of what inspired me, even in undergrad school, homes, interior spaces, walking, how people lived was very interesting to me. So I think in the beginning, it was mostly observation and not being able to connect the dots because I didn't have that instruction or someone, guiding me and telling me, like, hey, you could do this with art or try this or that. So yeah, I don't think there was like anything like really deep in taking art classes or anything like that in the beginning.
And as you started that experience, were you kind of going in with the mindset that you were going to go into education, or were you undecided, as so many young people are, right? I mean, changing majors and whatnot. But I'm assuming you took a bunch of art classes, but also some of those education classes early on, or?
Well, I was first just strictly an art major, and then some of the art students, we volunteered at a juvenile detention center and we taught some classes and then also tutored. And I think it was at that moment I was just stepping in the classroom, even though it was unconventional, working with teenagers at risk. I felt very at home, which sounds kind of ironic, but I really saw what these students needed and how art could make their day better. And so that's when I switched over and became an art ed major, but also didn't want to give up that studio practice, so did the BFA art education route.
Right, so very busy fall and spring semesters, probably some summer classes in there as well to I think work through all of that work, right, in terms of all the classes.
Yeah, it was a 5-year program. It took me 6 years.
Okay.
So there were some little breaks in between there, but yeah.
Well, again, were you always then, kind of interested in painting specifically, or did you do a number of other things? I don't know why I imagine like print could be in there somewhere, but I don't know.
Well, when you go into an education program, you are expected to know all aspects of art. So that was helpful in the sense, I took sculpture, I took ceramics, I took printmaking. My concentration was in drawing. And I even though I painted, the professor that I worked under, Carl Oldfit, was someone that I really respected. So that's why I went into the drawing area instead of painting. But it was okay for me to paint, but started out drawing and then eventually into paint.
What kind of subjects were you kind of interested, like you were kind of describing earlier, observations of things maybe with domesticity, interiors, because we were kind of remarking, some of your work as you kind of go back into that catalog. And again, it's nicolesgallery.com. We'll have this all linked up, of course, on Studio Break. You can easily, find all this information. And of course, on Instagram, it's Granvold underscore roller. So be sure to follow there. But you can see all the work that we'll be talking about. And again, you kind of go back and you kind of see some of these more representational kind of aspects of spaces, I guess. But maybe talk a little bit about those things that you were making as a young double major.
It was architecture, ironically so. So I was still working with spaces, exterior spaces, but there were some interior. And there were distortions that I applied to the architecture, and then also using more like arbitrary colors and things like that. So I was already abstracting those buildings, and they were mostly rural buildings, farmsteads, abandoned homes, like inside these old farmsteads, looking at the wallpaper. So it's kind of like I've cycled back a little bit. Objects left behind, when people throughout the Midwest, I mean, we've all seen it, where driving by or you come across an abandoned farmstead and just curious about, like, where did these people go? What kind of experiences do they have in this house? And why did they leave all these things behind? So I feel like even today I do some of that still. It just looks different.
Well, and again, just a random thought here as you're talking, there's an Instagram page called Decaying Midwest. Really fantastic, but I immediately start thinking about that because they kind of trespass and like completely abandon homes, and you kind of start thinking about all of this old stuff that you might pull from, So as you're describing all these things, I immediately start thinking some of these videos where people are kind of going in and you see, what you start to kind of like want to piece together some sort of narrative, like what happened here? How did this happen? And I don't know, even those elements of themselves, imagining is what kind of drew you in, some of these formal qualities that you might see in those situations. And I guess, to kind of think about it related to your degree, did you have to like do like a an exhibition as well as, completing your, I'm assuming like teaching assistantship stuff and stuff like that?
I did have a BFA exhibition, and it was with another artist, Tom Weiss, and he did sculptural, like these boats, and that were hung from the ceiling. And then I did more of the architectural paintings. It was a good show for a BFA show. I thought it turned out really great. And then after that, finishing my education degree and doing the student teaching, and then I did that here in Peoria or Tremont, Dunlap area, even though my degree was from Minnesota. So ISU worked with me at that point in helping me finish that portion because I was already engaged to my husband and wanted to move to the area and kind of start that life.
And did you know that immediately you're going to go into teaching afterwards? Because I know obviously you eventually pursued your MA in Boston as well.
Yeah, so I started right away teaching, and right now we have a shortage of teachers. And when I started, there was a shortage of jobs. So everyone told me, you're not going to get a job. And I'm like, fine, I don't really care. I mean, I should care, but that's just how I am. I'm like, it'll work out, and whatever happens, happens. And I graduated in December, which is not an ideal time to graduate. And so I did a maternity leave for an art ed teacher and then was a private teacher for a little bit with the Peoria Art Guild. And then I decided I should go in and do an interview. And there was an opening in Tremont, and I had never even been to this area. I was still new to Central Illinois, and I interviewed and got the job. So I was like, wow, I'm actually teaching. I was planning on just painting and maybe have a side job here. Those first 3 years were pretty rough, I will say, just getting one's curriculum together. And I think after the years continued and my classroom management and what I was teaching was more stable, or I felt more confident, then I was able to get back into my own artwork.
Were a lot of these threads kind of common then afterwards in terms of exploring similar themes?
I've always had this play back and forth between doing something in my own artwork and then bringing it to the classroom and having that creative element of coming up with different lessons. And then the different lessons and the students creating, and then sparking ideas in my own artwork. There was always this merging of ideas. And actually, my thesis for my MA in art education through Boston University was about being an artist teacher and then researching dividing classes where artwork was present, my own art making was present in my classroom, and when it was not. And what that made a difference with dialogue with my students, their creative output pretty much just validated working in the classroom. It wasn't like me cheating, like doing my own thing and ignoring students, because that's not what it's about. It's just kind of setting this tone of we're all creative individuals working on something, challenging ourselves. And I found it also made us, the students, more comfortable too, asking me questions or trying different things themselves.
That makes sense because, like again, there's so many, different media that students are familiar with. I would think that would be a great way to kind of build dialogue about, exploring things that maybe students aren't as used to. And again, I think of now, most of my students are like experts with stylus and, they know all sorts of programs, but sometimes like physically kind of working with materials, it could be a little bit intimidating. So I would imagine it kind of helps stir conversations towards, asking about that process. How did you get good at this? And it's just like lots and lots and lots of time and trial and error, right?
Definitely.
And again, maybe tell us too. So was this kind of like done remotely then, or?
The Boston University was online. It was before, like, people even talked about online, or it just had a bad reputation, I think. And then COVID, then it was like I feel like a little bit of a bad reputation again. But I will tell you, the program was amazing. They were way ahead of their time with technology, and I learned how to write right through, because that's all I did. It was a research-based school, or it is. So it was all about reading and writing, and then also applying it to your classroom and research, and then also connecting with people throughout the world, whether they were high school educators or they were in a museum setting. It was a lot of work, a lot of in the middle of the night, where I'd be working on my MA in art education, and my kids were young at the time. So, it worked for me, and I felt like it was worth it in the end. It was a program that I truly believe that helped me or pushed me forward.
Yeah, I would imagine just the maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I kind of think about the way that, like as a art student, your studio practice has full of research and experimentation and kind of like, figuring things out on how to maybe translate your message better or what you're presenting somebody. So I would imagine similarly, you're, thinking about how to organize your classroom then in a way that's going to kind of, like you kind of noted, kind of stimulate discussion and that kind of atmosphere that would be examples for students. So again, that's really kind of interesting to me. Like I said earlier, I think maybe everybody should kind of go through that. That's teaching in some regards because it's got to be extremely helpful. Is that what you found, kind of implementing those things? Because you were, if I'm not mistaken, teaching at the same time then too.
I mean, because that was part of my research, my classroom, and then also being an artist. Finding out, could I do that? Could I be an artist and an educator? Is this a good balance for my students and for myself and even for my family? And I learned it was a good thing. And it just even gave me more ambition to continue
Sure.
to go in that
Well, and I guess
direction.
something that we haven't talked about either is you're kind of pursuing all these things. Is there time for you to be submitting, for shows and exhibitions and you're kind of staying active in that realm, or is it hard to kind of balance out and
Yeah, so obviously, once I started my MFA with Bradley University, yes, I'd be exhibiting more. I did take a little bit of a break during my MA with Boston University because it was really heavily researched. It was about a year for even writing my thesis. And one of my goals at the end was, okay, now I'm going to take time for my artwork. and I wasn't planning on going back to school. I was pretty much done. But there was a portion in the study at through the program where I'd spend the summer at Boston University, and my kids were so my daughter, I think she was only like two at the time, and I just couldn't do it. So I had contacted Bradley University and Paul Krainik, he was the chair at the time, and asked if he'd be willing to teach some classes for me during the summer, and he said sure. And then, so those credits transferred to Boston University. And then later, he, when I finished the class, he goes, you know, once you're done, you should apply here for an MFA program. And I thought, no way. There's no way I'm going to do that. I'm so tired. It kind of sat with me for a while. And then I get restless really easily. So after so many years, then I went ahead and applied and then started at Bradley University in their painting program.
Well, and I guess, as we've been kind of talking, maybe, kind of see if you can umbrella, I guess, some of the major kind of themes, I guess, in your work. I'm assuming, as we were kind of talking earlier, some of those aspects of exploring architecture or kind of more representational type places that slowly kind of devolve into kind of something that's a much more abstracted language that's maybe a little bit different. But I don't know, what was the process like? Were you kind of always working from imagination? Were you like doing compositional sketches? Did you incorporate like photos that would kind of help inform these things? How are you making some of these early compositions that are kind of more like cityscape? Okay.
I would say photography, you know, even today with some of the work that I'm doing, even though it's not representational, if I happen to see a color combination or patterns or even light falling on a wall or a shadow, like you do with your work, you know, I'll take that little photo just with my phone, just in like a memory log. Of wow, I really, really like that. That was special, and not for intentions of I'm going to recreate that as much as I felt it was important enough to take a photo of it. And then it'll just sit with me. Sometimes I go back and look at those photos, but a lot of times I don't, ironically. So I just take them or collect different things, but I normally don't go back and look at them. I just feel the need like I might, but then I don't. I think it just it's in my mind more so than I need it to pull those things out.
And is it typical that you'll just kind of like start in on a canvas or, again, you kind of work a variety of formats, certainly currently, but even, as I'm looking at your site, there's some maybe kind of smaller, 12 by 12 inch works versus some of these much, more mid-sized to larger kind of works. But is that something that you typically like to have something to kind of react to as you're working?
I think at this point now, I do some sketching. Well, I have to for the shape canvases. And I used to have a more impromptu approach to it, but now I have a pretty set idea of what the painting will look like. And with the stackables, which I'll be exhibiting at your gallery, those still have more experimental play impromptu process of configuring the pieces together, making separate units, and then seeing how things go, or noting it's missing a color or some kind of pattern or texture, and then making that and then adding to some recycled parts of some of my other works. But the geometric shape canvases that are really heavily influenced by wallpaper design patterning throughout history, I think even starting mostly around the arts and crafts movement to the 1970s to current happenings, because I feel like there's a revival of that, are in those pieces, but now they're floating into the stackable collection. It's kind of strange. I took a photo of the last piece that I did, which was a stackable. And right now I'm working on a 10 foot by 10 foot painting for an exhibition in Rockport, Texas. That's next week. So I'm trying to finish both bodies of work. And I I was working on the stackable at school where I'm teaching, and then the big painting, it's at home in my dining room right now just because of space. And it's not going back and forth like typical artwork will go back and forth with me. It's just too large. I'd have to have a trailer to take it. And I took the stackable home and I placed it on top of the other painting. And it's just the colors are similar. One's organic, one's geometric with like a really heavy flat kind of William Morris patterning, but mixed with the 1960s. And it's just, it was really strange to see the two works, the two bodies of work that have different languages with the geometry versus the organic. And they look like they were related. So still kind of putting those things together in my mind, how that works.
Yeah. And would you say that like a lot of this was kind of clarified, you know, in terms of what people would think about? Because there's kind of like almost like three different bodies of work a little bit, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. But is that something that got really clarified then in graduate school specifically then?
Yeah, I did focus more so on the shape canvases for my MFA exhibition. I didn't include the stackables or any of the panel pieces for that exhibition space. It just made more sense to have that body of work there. I did take a ceramics class with Randy Carlson. He is the ceramic professor at Bradley. And that pushed me more in that direction with the stackables to have another element of exploration. And I think it's still fairly new in my artwork or what I'm creating. So I'm excited that I get to exhibit at your gallery where I'm just focusing on those stackables. And it makes sense to have it in a more unconventional experimental space.
We're taking a quick coffee break to remind you to head on over to studiobreak.com and check out some of the archive podcasts that we have with a variety of different artists like Sally C. Garner and Jason Rafferty. Those are recent episodes, and of course, so many more that you can listen to while you're working away in the studio. It makes a great studio companion, so check them all out. You can, of course, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, so please do that. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, which comes out, you know, every once in a while, highlighting recent episodes as well as opportunities at Studio Break Gallery, like our 2024 Studio Break Student Competition, which is now open to all undergraduate and graduate artists. So if you're interested in applying, our deadline is May 15th. Head on over to studiobreak.com, look under the competition tab, and find out how to apply. All right, now let's get right back into this episode with Nicole Granvold Roller. What kind of artists, you know, were kind of like inspirations, especially as you've continued to make work all these years, you know, because I think of like Al Held or
yes.
Julie Maritou, you know, especially with some of the works on panel. But are there other influences, especially like the color is so interesting for all your work? So I don't know. I'd imagine there's just a lot of things that you take from.
Well, Frank Stella, the earlier work, but I think he's pretty brave to do the later work. Like he didn't get just stuck into what people really loved about his work. Annie Elbers, the Bauhaus, Mies van der Rohe. There's a building even near you, the Farnsworth House. I think we might have talked about it. Outside, inside. And then again, the history of wallpaper, you know, with the arts and crafts and industrial revolution and Architectural Digest. It's not a specific artist, but it's one of the only paper copies of like a magazine that I subscribe to that I get very excited about getting interior designers. I think they're very brave. I love how they design a space. And typically it's not the things that we actually live with, but, you know, in the magazines, you know, combining stripes with florals with really bold punches of color. House of Hackney is another designing group. Mary Mecco, Finnish designer that I enjoy more, the bold flat patterning.
It's interesting, you know, as I think about it, when you kind of look at the shape panel works, if you kind of look at earlier stuff, you kind of have elements of maybe some of those panel pieces that are kind of coming in. And I think about maybe the way that you might have been like painting textures or kind of creating these atmospheric layers versus these flats. And as you kind of look at the evolution of that, it seems like at some point again is when you're maybe kind of starting to choose some of those actual materials and then, just having a lot of these super kind of flat elements. Is that specifically like the transition that happened for like the thesis?
I think if anything, I made a stance on, I knew I was doing something that wasn't pure in the sense, looking at geometric abstract artists, having like an emotional connection with color, flat planes, no depth, any of those things. And I was probably similar to the pattern and decoration movement. I love that aspect, when thinking about Frank Stella's earlier work. But I question what if I did those things, but then did everything they said it's not about. So I went in and created those illusions of spaces, but also contrast with flat areas of color, but very ornate pattern making. It just felt really natural to me, even though like the purists would be like, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. But that's okay. That's okay. I think in contemporary practices, there's so much going on that it doesn't have to be one form of artwork or stuff. You don't have to have this particular group that you associate with.
It's just really interesting because you kind of, think about the color play. A lot of times there's, either color variations or like implied light and dark shapes that are kind of wrapping around forms. They kind of become really dimensional. And then we have these like little pockets of areas that you kind of want to see into. So that kind of has a really fun atmosphere. And I think you were noting before, just because of the way that these are kind of set up, you had to do a little bit more, preliminary kind of planning to see how these things would be incorporated.
Yeah, I think it was when I did the panel pieces because there was room for cutting away the negative space in the end. I started out with a square and then worked from there. But then with the shape canvases, which my husband makes for me, there had to be something I could give to the person who was making the canvases. So I would come up with the sketches. And then the dimensions and things like that. And then it had been a while where it was just the shape of the canvas and then thinking about how I would work with the space inside of it. But now both of them are happening at the same time. Like I've broken up the planes as I'm creating the sketches that they go together. My MFA title is Flip Flap Fold, and there is a lot of that happening within the sketches. And then when I go in and paint, like I've already decided the breaking points of the intersections of those shape canvases. So it's changed through what I'm working on at the moment. There's much more planning involved, which is a nice relief with the stackables. Because it balances out, that thinking really hard about how it's going to work.
Yeah, and there's just such a range, So again, I hope people check it out. Again, it's nicolesgallery.com. Again, that'll be linked on Studio Break. But I especially love like in some of the more recent ones where you can kind of feel like almost like layers are being peeled off of other layers, which I think you're kind of describing a little bit. Or like again, you might feel like you're seeing a chunk of like a wallpaper design inspired thing, or almost like antique carpet. Obviously, a lot more lively kind of colors, but they're just, again, beautiful combinations and explorations. There's, pieces that have aspects that look like sky. So, it seems like, again, you kind of took a lot of those different things that you're doing and kind of elevated them, in terms of how all these kind of come together. Tell us a little bit about how that kind of shifted. I know you were kind of, noting that you took a ceramics class. Is that what kind of started the stackable pieces a little bit more in terms of experimenting with different materials and
Definitely, before they had been just remnants of the geometric panel pieces that were cut into more organic shapes. And it was mentioned during a critique because we were online at the time, are these ceramic works? And unless you see it in person, you don't know necessarily what the material is. And then after a while, I thought, well, it could be ceramic. So eventually in my classroom, I just started using clay because I teach ceramics and then seeing what would happen with that. And one of the first critiques I had with Randy Carlson, I was a little bit nervous to show him the work because I'm working with a material that I'm not as familiar as he is. And then I'm doing very untraditional practices. Some are attached together through cross-hatching and slipping, but then other elements are glued, like the wood paneling. And you can't adhere those two materials together in a traditional form of cross-hatching and slipping. And so I was a little nervous what he would think about it, and he was extremely accepting. It was good. It was a good critique. And then I had an opening, when you're in grad school, of taking other classes. And I asked him if I could take a ceramics class with him, like an independent study. And he agreed upon it. And I thought I was going to be working more in the studio, like that would be something he would require me to do. But he is a practical person. And he just said, Nicole, why would you not use what you have? Why make things difficult for you? You're not going to be a Bradley this whole time. So use your resources that you have that you can continue this exploration later if you want to. So that was really good advice. You can only do so much with wood. For me, just cutting simple shapes. With the clay, I could be more diverse, I guess, in what my output of the shapes and the colors and things like that. So, yeah, I guess it did. It opened up a lot working with the clay.
Well, and to kind of break down one of these two even further, one of the images that we'll be, sharing, of course, is Day Stacks. I believe that's going to be one of the pieces in the show. Could you elaborate a little bit more on like
Sure.
how a piece like this came together?
Well, currently I am at school, as you know, and at my desk, I have this old librarian desk. It's the best teaching desk ever. And I have pieces surrounded by me. And it's like pieces of already cut panels, but the sides are not painted. And then I have ceramic works that have all been fired, whether it's been bis fired. Or I've already put a glaze, whether it be like an underglaze or regular gloss glaze. It's all low fire. I have them surrounded around my desk and I just kind of play with them throughout the day. And actually, my students come up and they'll start stacking things too. And they'll tell me, I think you should do this or I think you should do that. So it's like working on a painting and stepping back from it, or having it in your home or your studio, and you're doing other things, and you look at it, and then you walk away and maybe add something to it, and then walk away and look at it. For me, they're just the pieces as the parts are just surrounded on my desk, and I stack them throughout the day, try different things. Maybe create more if I feel like the color palette is pretty, I don't know, not enough variety to play with, then I'll create more pieces.
And how do you kind of go about, like, are they all kind of ones that have to be glazed and fired, or are you painting back into any of them, or?
They're all glazed and fired, but I'm a little bit embarrassed. And I told Mary Alice that don't critique me or judge me because I feel like people who are really good at ceramics and then they see some artist coming in with like sticky wood panels and clay and
Sure.
things like might be like, whoa, like don't do that. So
Right.
a lot of them are just individual pieces that have been glued together with a really potent glue. It's a
Sure.
glue. I don't even know what the brand is called, but my daughter made with her grandmother. Have you seen where those plates are stacked? together. You know, people will put like a plate and a bowl, or and they use them
Okay.
as lawn ornaments. So this had been glued together and stuck outside our house through like heat and rain and just all kinds of weather, and they don't come apart. So I knew, like, hey, this is going to be pretty sturdy stuff. And I normally hang the work in my house for a while too to make sure everything, you know, will be solid.
Well, again, it's just interesting because, like, in the one piece that we were talking about, day stacks, we've got, a number of kind of like cool colors that might kind of go together. But I would imagine as you're kind of compiling these, then you can just kind of play around, and see what, maybe this one winds up, shifting more like complementary colors. Or I would imagine, the goal is to kind of like have these fragments that remind people of things. And I guess maybe that could lead into, that question too for the viewer. Is that something that's kind of like a goal to kind of have them think about things that might be familiar or maybe almost nostalgic too?
Well, and I think even the title about, you know, having it as day stacks, they're fragments or collections of visual things that we will encounter throughout our day, at least what I encounter from the moment we wake up, you know, fabric or clothing or even graphic design. You know, these are just little collections of just being human, living our day-to-day lives. I've talked about this before, but not too much today, taking that moment of stepping back with everything that we all experience all day long. We don't take appreciation of our surroundings. It's hard. It's almost like you have to like mentally tell yourself, appreciate this moment. I don't, you know, going on trips or anything like that. Okay, like just appreciate the moment and don't calculate. Like taking a photo, or what am I going to do with this moment? Just appreciate it. And so a lot of my work is about that, the collection of moments of pause.
Well, it strikes me too, jumps back to what we were talking about. It's a very busy and stressful time of year. And it makes me think about that headspace that maybe some of our students are at, where it's hard to kind of commit to something or kind of work through something, even with all of these obligations and things we have to do. If you're kind of committed into that moment and just seeing it through, I think is, the kind of trick, right? I mean, something that we haven't noted at all. I mean, like, you've got so many pieces on your site. I mean, you're extremely productive too. So, I mean, like, you can see it kind of adds up to a whole lot of work. And I would imagine a lot of that is what kind of generates new pieces, where you might, try something that worked in this piece, or maybe I've got to, switch it around, or take a component over here and swap it over there. So I don't know. I would imagine that just kind of frees your mind to kind of have a little bit more play. And I think that's something that you noted too. These are a little bit more playful than ones that have to be as calculated.
Yeah. And I always think of, you know, a lot of us talk about this element of play, but I think I play really hard. Like you're probably your puppy, you know, you send him out and you're like, burn off all this energy and he's having fun, but then crashes at the end of the night. So I think there is this moment of enjoyment, and but it also is a lot of work, as you know. It is a lot of work to be an artist and an educator and having a family. But I think, you know, as artists, we just have this internal drive, this need to create. And for me, exhibiting is really important. Selling's not as important, but don't tell my husband that. Like having the work and seeing it in a different space is really what I'm looking for. And that's the reward in the end for me to see the work without other things, you know, blocking it, or it's intentional to be together.
And something that I like about that we haven't talked about these two, obviously, like the surface then isn't flat anymore, right? These things are kind of like actually popping off of the wall a bit more. We start kind of seeing the way that shadows might even start kind of play in terms of the way that they're lit, which is also like another kind of cool, element. Or, we were talking earlier about color shadows, and things like that, that you kind of find interesting in observations. You start kind of seeing the way that those interact with how they're lit. So it kind of adds like a different element versus the works that are a little bit more flat and geometric.
Yeah, it is kind of funny because I've worked with different consulting firms and looking at mostly my larger works for corporate spaces. And there was one painting that this company was considering, but I didn't realize I had to explain it's not three-dimensional. Like they literally, it was a two-dimensional. So now I take like videos, to show the work because, from just the photograph, the flat ones also can look like there's a relief quality to them. But yet I'm working with these other ones that actually have that physical quality, but also I'm flattening some areas of it, and the shadows are important, as you noted. So, yeah.
That's a fun world to kind of be in, because I would imagine then you can kind of jump between these different bodies as you're developing new work, or it sounds like at the same time for what you've got going on, for the stuff that you've been preparing for here, it's been a lot of the stackable focus, and then, with some of these other shows, maybe slightly different focuses. But again, there's so much crossover, and especially, like, I think again, the color element is just so exciting to me. I'm all for, intense colors, but you balance them out so well with, variations and muted colors and, just little subtle layers, or, maybe a different pattern or something. So there's a lot of, like, things that you find, while you're looking, which I think is always kind of nice. Especially, I don't know, sometimes it can be a little underwhelming when you see something in
Yes.
person and you're like, oh, there's nothing hidden in there. So I really like that, Maybe just tell us a little bit more, like, what you're planning on showing. Again, the show Color Stacks with Mary Alice Carroll. It's going to be May 18th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Studio Break Gallery in West Chicago here. So definitely come on out. You can, mingle with the artists and see some of these great pieces. But, maybe talk about how that work has been going towards for the show. Have you been kind of obsessing and, trying to make those final decisions, I guess?
Well, yeah, I think so. Like I mentioned, I that body of work has been closely where I'm working throughout the day. So I have separated it a little bit more so with the other exhibition that I have coming up. It motivated me to work with the stackables again. There was a little bit of a pause because I was working with these gouache paintings that had no patterning or anything like that. And then so now, going back and working with the stackables, I see a difference from the first or second round of stackables. I see more of the wallpaper patterning coming into this collection.
Really excited to be showing it. So
Thank you.
it's going to be really fun to kind of have your work here. Remind us too, like, you made mention of some, other shows that are kind of coming up. Please, feel free to kind of share any of that information. Obviously, where people can find your work, because it is available through a number of galleries.
Well, this summer I'm taking a group to Europe. I mentioned that, but I am going to the Everwood Farmstead Foundation Artist Retreat, and that's in Wisconsin. And the Rockport, Texas exhibition. It's at their art center. It's a new facility, and that's next week. And I might be doing something with Jan Brandt in July. And then the following year, another residency in France that I'm looking forward to. I had a residency this past summer in Crete. And so now that I've pretty much explored all my education opportunities, my new thing is to attend different artist residencies throughout the world, I guess, to keep pushing myself in that direction. But yeah, so I have work at Boxhart Gallery in Pittsburgh, and then the Gilded Pear in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and the Nunes Gallery in New Jersey. And I'm actually have a piece at the James May for their Art of Water 8, and working with the Bond Studio in Cincinnati. And have some work just on the art file at the Painting Center in New York, and then our local gallery here in Morton, and that's the Muse Gallery. So a little bit of everywhere.
Yeah, no,
Stretched
absolutely.
a little bit everywhere.
And remind us, so is the website the best place to kind of follow along, or is it more Instagram and
Like I try to keep my website updated, but my Instagram is my go-to. And I also, post daily stories, kind of like a journal,
sure.
whether it's my dogs or something like that with my artwork. But I pretty much post everything on my Instagram.
And that's Granvold underscore roller. So again, people
Yes, correct.
can
Yeah.
be sure to follow and stay up to date there. Super excited to have you here in a couple of weeks with Mary Alice. And again, it should be a fantastic show. So once again, please come out to Color Stacks and see it. A lot of great work that'll be here. So super excited to have that. And again, thank you so much for taking the
Thank
time to kind of
you.
share your work. And it's been great seeing it. And while it's taken a little bit of time, I'm glad to have it here. It's going to be an amazing show. So again, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, David.
Thanks once again to Nicole for joining me. Please check out her website, nicolesgallery.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at Granvold underscore roller. You can see all sorts of work as well as announcements about exhibitions there. And of course, please come on out and check out Color Stacks featuring Nicole Granvold Roller, Mary Alice Carroll. That is May 18th through June 11th at Studio Break Gallery here in West Chicago, with an opening of May 18th from 5 to 8. Come on out, meet the artists, have a great time seeing the work. It's going to be amazing. Note once again to any students out there listening, please apply to our 2024 Studio Break Student Competition. Once again, our juror this year is Natalie Pavoni, who's an artist, educator, and project coordinator at Purple Window Gallery in Chicago. So very excited to have her on board. She'll be selecting 3 undergraduate and 3 graduate artists to appear on the podcast, as well as select 2 artists for an upcoming 2-person exhibition here at Studio Break Gallery here in West Chicago. Applications are super easy. You submit a small fee, you send an email with all your information, and you are done. So head on over to studiobreak.com, look under the competition tab in the menu, or just find it in our link tree on Instagram. And as our May 15th deadline approaches, please help spread the word. We love providing opportunities for emerging artists to share their work and to possibly bring here a Studio Break Gallery on the podcast. So please help spread the word if you know anybody that would be interested in applying. As always, head on over to studiobreak.com, check out some of the archive episodes. They make a great studio companion. 305 episodes to listen to, so please check them all out. You can subscribe on Spotify or Apple, and of course, if you leave us a review, it helps in terms of visibility, so please help do that. Or just spread the word if you enjoyed listening to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. Music for today's episode is by Golden Shadow, which features myself, Ben Cohan, and Brett Beery. Give us a follow on Instagram at Golden Shadow Band. You can check out some of Ben's paintings at mbencohan studio on Instagram. You can find some of Brett Beery's albums and music production linked there. Typical Stereo Records, that's at Brett Beery on Instagram. Also great studio listening, and we're excited to feature some limited edition cassettes here at the gallery, so please check that out. If you're interested in my work, you don't have to go too far. It's all integrated there at studiobreak.com, davidlinaway.com, whatever you want to call it. And of course, you can find me everywhere at David Linaway, so be sure to follow. Of course, with Studio Break, be sure to follow in social media. Like our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter X at Studio Break. And of course, on Instagram, that's the best place to say hello, at Studio underscore Break. We really love hearing from folks that are enjoying the podcast, so please drop a line, especially if you enjoyed today's episode. Really appreciate it. Hope your studio practice is crushing it. There's all sorts of beautiful things coming up this summer. We hope that you enjoyed listening to today's episode. We'll talk to you real soon.